Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Okay. Marla Zink of the Washington Appellate Project on behalf of Mr. Velazquez. This case concerns the civil commitment of Mr. Velazquez and the meaning of the phrase, behavior which places another person or persons in reasonable fear of sustaining such harm. And a year ago, this court held in detention of AM, the unpublished case, that that phrase, that definition, means what it says. That is that when there is behavior that places another person or persons in reasonable fear, it must be in reasonable fear of themselves sustaining such harm. We ask that the court hold the same here and in a published opinion. There are other provisions in the civil commitment statute that allow for third-party interpretations and opinions. That was not at issue here. The plain language of the statute should control and should be applied here. When statutes are clear and unambiguous, the court applies that plain language. And in cases that restrict one's civil liberties, one's liberty interests, we use a strict interpretation of the statute. So here we must construe it narrowly, and we must use the words to mean what they say. And that is that behavior which places another person or persons in reasonable fear of sustaining such harm means that there must be a connection between the person who is at risk of harm. It has to be the same person who's in reasonable fear of sustaining that harm. And here I think the state concedes that that evidence wasn't presented. What the state argues instead for is a different interpretation of the statute, one that would require this court to read out words of the statute and to render that language superfluous. We know that that's not this court's functions. That's the role of the legislature to amend the statute if it means something different. There was no evidence here from anyone that was in reasonable fear of themselves sustaining harm. Mr. Velazquez was detained initially based on a call from his sister about fear of harm to third parties. No one talked to those third parties about their own fear. Those third parties were not called at the hearing to testify as to their own fears. What came in instead was an examining physician who talked about his own fear that other people, those third parties, would be harmed. That's not what the statute requires, and this court should hold that the evidence was insufficient under the plain language. We know, too, that this is the meaning of the statute because it's in contrast to other provisions in the statute. And as Conover and other cases discuss, when there's differing languages used by the legislature means different things. So here we know that the legislature intended for the reasonable fear to be by the person in fear of sustaining harm to themselves, because in other provisions of the statute, there can be behaviors that were placed on another person that don't require that person to come in and testify to that harm. But here, alternatively, what we require is that that person be in reasonable fear of sustaining such harm themselves.
The state argues that detention of AM is distinguishable factually because the doctor specifically stated he feared DV would harm his ex-wife, her new boyfriend, hospital staff, and the greater community. So can you address that argument?
Sure. I think what the state is arguing is that because the doctor here identified specific third parties that could be in fear of harm or that he was in fear of harm, that was sufficient to satisfy the statute. But that's not what AM held. What AM held was that the target of the harm and the person in reasonable fear must be the same. Now, in AM, they didn't do either. They didn't identify the target or connect that to the reasonable fear. Here we arguably have the target, but we don't have any connection between that target and reasonable fear.
Is there an inference from the doctor's testimony when he gets to the nurse's report about a threat to cut people up on his way out the door that the doctor himself fears for himself since he's at the hospital?
No, I don't think we can commit on an inference to begin with, and also that's not what was discussed at all. That was not, the doctor never said that he was in fear himself or that any other staff members were in fear for themselves, and none of those staff members came in. So what was at issue was whether these Facebook threats, we can, you know, concede for purposes of this argument that they could be interpreted as threats, that they that they placed his ex-wife and her boyfriend in reasonable fear, but there was no evidence of that, no testimony to that. And the language of the statute...
Yeah, but the question of Judge Verrillen doesn't relate to the ex-wife or the boyfriend. It relates to the doctor and hospital staff and the community. So what's your response to that?
That there was not testimony or evidence that they were, in fact, in reasonable fear of harm themselves.
But there was testimony from the doctor.
I don't think the doctor's testimony can be read as him being in reasonable fear of harm to himself.
What about hospital staff?
None of them came in and testified about
his
reasonable fear.
Testimony about hospital staff.
Well, in WCC and in the unpublished case MP, which is cited in the briefing as well, in those cases, the staff members and the persons who were in reasonable fear themselves came in and testified and presented that evidence. That's what we're lacking here. This is a 14-day commitment that restricts Mr. Velasquez's liberty. The statute is to be interpreted strictly, and the evidence is not clear, cogent, and convincing to show that there was that this prong was satisfied here. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Jocelyn McCurtain, and I represent the respondent, the State of Washington, in this matter. The issue before the court today is whether a third party's testimony regarding their reasonable fear for another is sufficient to hold that a person is a substantial risk of physical harm to others as a result of a mental disorder. We are asking that this court does affirm the ruling of the lower court in finding that Dr. Lugo Steidel's testimony, the licensed clinical psychologist in this case, was sufficient when he indicated that the respondent presented a substantial risk of physical harm to others, as evidenced by his interactions with the with DV in this case, with his review of the medical records, him speaking with him regarding the threats that happened prior to hospitalization, and the respondent's or DV's behaviors while he was in the hospital setting. The statute for the court to consider in this case is RCW 7105-230, which specifically discusses the substantial risk of physical harm to others and what the state is required to prove in those cases. Specifically, an individual may be detained for up to 14 days of involuntary treatment if the petitioner, the state in this case, proves by a preponderance of the evidence that the respondent presents as a result of a mental disorder likelihood of serious harm to others, and that a less restrictive treatment option is not available. And in this case, there was no less restrictive treatment option that was available to DV. The statute goes on to define what that means, and that's what's at issue in this case under 7105.020 subsection 27, which provides that a likelihood of serious harm is a substantial risk of physical harm will be inflicted by a person upon another as evidenced by behavior which has caused such harm or which places another person or persons in reasonable fear of sustaining such harm. Here we have a doctor that testified regarding his reasonable fear, and the respondent's position in this case is that that is sufficient to satisfy the statute.
Do you agree the doctor did not testify to his personal fear for his own safety?
His words weren't specifically that he was fearful for his safety alone. However, the record does reflect that he was fearful for hospital staff safety, and Dr. Angel Lugo Steidel is staff at Fairfax Hospital. The specific statement that was made to hospital...
Did you argue it that way below?
Your Honor, the argument...
That he argued first-person harm?
No. The argument below was that he made the statement that he was fearful for hospital staff, and that was certainly made at the trial court level in front of Judge McCullough, and he relied upon that in making his decision. The statement that was made that Dr. Lugo Steidel relied upon to hospital staff was he was going to get out of there and he was going to stab people on the way out. At the trial court level, the prosecutor indicated that for the basis of Dr. Lugo Steidel's opinion, that could go towards his own reasonable fear. Now, the respondent's position here is that not only does the statute itself allow for third-party individuals under the RCW 7105-230, but we would also argue that this court looked to the legislative intent under RCW 7105-010. Now, in the legislative intent, it specifically states that the intent of the ITA statute is to help individuals that are currently suffering from mental disorders, but within that same line, it also focuses on public safety. And in this case, there was a significant concern for public safety, both in the threats that were made by DV on Facebook that Dr. Lugo-Seidel spoke to him about, and also he admitted to in cross-examination that he had made those statements.
Hasn't the legislature made three provisions for dealing with that kind of threat? One, that the person who's threatened fears the harm, and you put on that testimony. Two, he threatens a third person and he has a history of violent acts under B. Or three, under the true threat statute.
Correct, Your Honor. There are three different...
But you're trying to add a fourth element that's not written into the statute, which is a third party fears that the threat would be carried out against the alleged victim.
There's no need to add a fourth prong, if you would put it that way, for the state to go forward on, because our belief is that under that first one that Your Honor mentioned, that it's sufficient to encompass that. And the legislative intent supports that in terms of the public safety issue. When we look at cases such as this one, for example, this case was an out-of-county case out of Cowlitz County. The initial petition was filed on the 25th of July and then had to be heard on July 27th and then was continued on to the 28th. So the petitioner in this case, the hospital, had 2 days in order to get their case heard for an individual that was posing significant threats towards specific individuals as well. His ex-wife, who he named in cross-examination, his ex-wife's new boyfriend, and then made statements as well to hospital staff that he was going to harm or stab them on the way out. And then his behaviors continued in the hospital setting where he was noted to be agitated. At one point, he had homicidal ideation. At another point, he had to be placed on security precautions.
Has he committed other violent acts?
Not that the state is aware of, and certainly is not bore out in the record. Based on the...
I just stuck with the word sustaining. Person, fear, sustaining. Doesn't that have to mean that person has fear of sustaining themselves injury?
No, Your Honor. We read that as an individual could be subject to sustaining such harm, and if we bring another individual, such as the doctor, who relied upon both his interactions with the respondent as well as the initial petition and what was provided in the hospital record, that's sufficient to show that there could be a substantial risk of physical harm to others, such as in this case. Now, petitioner's counsel also spoke to AM, which is a recent decision from 2016 from this case. It is factually distinguishable from the case we have here. In AM, that was a 90-day petition, clear, cogent, and convincing evidence. The prosecutor proceeded under several allegations, grave disability, harm before hospitalization, and harm while in hospital. Now, the judge in that case dismissed grave disability, harm before hospitalization, and ended up holding on, based on conduct within the hospital setting, that the individual should be detained. What's important in the doctor in that case's opinion was she stated she was fearful that that patient would get out of the hospital setting, continue to make these hypothetical kind of ambiguous threats, and that that person would be harmed. That's not what we have in this case. What we have is a 14-day preponderance of the evidence standard where a doctor came in and testified regarding specific individuals, his specific concerns about these people, specifically DV's ex-wife, specifically DV's ex-wife's new husband, and hospital staff, relying upon his also interaction with the patient, because the patient agreed to speak with him in this case, whereas in the AM case, that patient refused. And in addition, we also have specific items that the DV spoke about using, such as a knife or such as a gun. Whereas in AM, what we have is an individual who was making sort of hypothetical statements, as the court noted in their holding, that a hypothetical situation that could happen or a hypothetical individual is simply not enough for the state to allege that an individual presents a substantial risk of physical harm to others under the clear, cogent, and convincing standard.
But those factual differences don't make any difference whatever if the statute means that the person who is in fear has to be in fear of personally sustaining the harm.
And our position is that the individual that comes in to testify doesn't necessarily have to state that they're personally in fear, as long as they are providing to the court that they are fearful someone else could be sustaining such harm. I think if we can take a hypothetical situation, for example, As Judge McCullough posed to the lower the defense attorney in the lower court, where he indicated if the allegation is that a respondent is threatening to harm a baby, a child that cannot talk or cannot articulate whether or not that child is in fear, would your reading of the statute say that that person would not be covered by the statute because we won't have any way of knowing whether or not that infant had a reasonable apprehension of fear? Now, the lower court defense attorney answered in the affirmative that the statute did not cover that person. However, that is not a reasonable interpretation of the statute. If we have individuals such as a child or such as an individual that can't have the mental capacity to come in to testify, and we are now not allowing for those individuals to be covered or we are not allowing for those individuals to be held in the in-hospital setting to receive mental health care treatment, that can't be what the legislature intended in this case. Similar to that situation.
If that's really what you're saying, it means that so long as the state puts on the testimony from anyone that they believe a remark from the person being held caused fear in them that it would be carried out, a commitment could go forward. That's an extraordinarily low threshold.
It certainly can't be anyone, but such as situations in this one where we have a doctor who
it's
evaluated.
It's not restricted in the statute. You're proposing that as long as anyone believes that the harm threatened could be carried out, they're in reasonable fear that it could be carried out. Whether there's any history, I mean, if you've got a history of violent acts, you'd use B. So no history of violent acts, as long as someone comes in and says, oh, I think that was going to be carried out, I was in fear, you can commit something.
If an individual is reasonably placed in fear by a person's threats, for example, like we have here, of the doctor who spoke with him regarding those threats, mm-hmm. or if another individual sees a threat take place and is in reasonable fear for another's safety, it's our position that that's sufficient in order to go forward with the harm to others.
And I think it's unreasonable to think the legislature thought that in the statute. As you were suggesting, it was unreasonable to think they omitted protecting infants. Thank you.
We would ask that the court affirms. Thank you.
So as the court just pointed out, the state cannot make its argument without reading language out of the statute, and that is not a permissible basis of statutory interpretation. Returning to whether the reasonable fear can be the doctor's as to himself, at RP 76, the court found only that the threatened behavior was to the ex-wife or her boyfriend, and that was consistent with the state's argument below and until recently here. And also, starting at RP 16, it's clear that the evidence that came in relating to statements made to staff members was admitted only for the doctor's opinion and not as substantive evidence. There were repeated objections below on that. So again, that starts at page 16, but it continues for multiple pages because there were continuing objections by Mr. Velasquez's attorney below on that. So that, again, would not make it a sufficient basis here, nor do we believe it's reasonable to contend that the doctor was speaking in the third person about fear to himself.
Did the court sustain the objections?
Yes. Yes, it was that.
There was testimony from the doctor about hospital staff and there were objections, and the court sustained those objections?
Correct. It was the state. The objections were made, and then the state argued that they were not admitting the evidence as substantive evidence, and the court allowed it in on that basis because it was the state's concession that it was not coming in as substantive evidence, but as an exception to the hearsay for the basis of the doctor's opinion. In other words, not to be considered substantively. So this court could not consider it substantively either. And the state makes arguments here and in the briefing this court needs to read out language of the statute because it would be so hard for the state to prove its case. But in WUCC and in MP, for example, the state was able to bring in testimony in order to commit based on a reasonable fear of one's harm to oneself. And so it's certainly not impossible for the state to meet this standard. Again, this is a restriction on, a total restriction on my clients and others in his position's liberty, and the court should interpret the statute to mean what it says. If the court has no further questions, we ask that you reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is...